Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Welcome, everyone, to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil. I'm Brent Smith, alongside Shane Stedsty, and we are going to get ready for Anago, Wisconsin.
Yeah, man, rounds 3 and 4. We were kind of excited after Wheatland to kind of ease into the season and have a little bit longer layoff, you know, 3 off weekends of no racing before we got back to it. And all of a sudden, it's gone, and it's, you know, almost the beginning of June here, and we're headed to the Langlade County Motorplex for rounds 3 and 4. It snuck up on us.
Yeah, it goes by so fast these summer days, and the weather's going to be beautiful coming into this weekend, and we're ready for rounds 3 and 4. It's just crazy, like you said.
Yeah, and I was, kind of looking at what the pro class fields are going to look like. Obviously, Pro 4 gets a huge boost by having Cole Mamer making his season debut, and what I've seen on social media is the plan for him is to run the rest of this year, every race the rest of the year. So after a couple of partial seasons and struggling to, make it to every race, sounds like he's in for the rest of the way after putting a new truck together. That's going to add that much more excitement to Pro 4. Remember, CJ still sidelined, Kyle Greaves filling in for Anago, but every truck in that field, top to bottom, should be capable of winning a race.
Oh, yeah, I believe it. It's going to be a strong field no matter what. And now you put Cole Mamer in there, it's going to really dice it up in the good way. And he always wants to come out to win just like everybody else at Pro 4. But he has a new truck, new ideas, and he's always bad fast, especially at Anago.
I'm always fascinated by the people that are driven to innovate so much that, you know, Cole, once he got the what's now the old truck figured out, the thing was a rocket ship. What is it about some of these guys that they get to that point and they're like, all right, now I'm ready to make it faster? Guys like him and Trad and the Greaves, for that matter. Put me in the mind of a racer a little bit. I'm not that guy, but you are to an extent. Why not stick with the truck that is already fast and rebuild from scratch?
Right, and hey, my ears and eyes are always up in the air wondering when I hear these decisions, but at the same time, it's like you're always trying to innovate, make things better. Maybe there was 2-3 things on his old truck that he found out that really worked well when they tried it. So instead of just switching a couple pieces on the truck, you build a whole new one. And it comes down to funding and money and everything like that. But that's what Cole Mamer is an innovator. And he kind of bounced a lot off of Kyle LeDuc, watching him grow up through the ranks and
right,
just seeing what he needed to do. And I think he just filled shoes in the right direction of how to build, how to maintain, how to keep that thing going throughout the whole weekend. And now he's on a top level in his own mind and in our eyes. He knows what to do to get the job done. And I think building a new truck to get to the point is just to have fresh, just to see what it is and what it could be. I mean, if you got the talent, you have the ideas, the resources, why not?
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how he fits into that Pro 4 field. And, we try to reserve our predictions for before the season, and we're certainly not in the business of making good predictions because we're wrong just about every time. But one name I want to keep an eye on in the Pro 4 field is Adrian Chenny, who's had a couple of podiums there over the last few years. Anago is kind of the hometown track for where his racing program is based out of in Neva, which is just a couple minutes away from Anago. I'm saying watch out for the wild man. What do you think about that?
Oh yeah, Adrian always turns it up a little bit more at his hometown track, and I believe he'll be there. I mean, Wheatland, it didn't seem like he was very strong at all, but just the first week in the new year, just trying to get your feet wet again, I believe he'll be back. I'm sure he did some testing in the last couple weeks there. So it's going to be an all-out war. We'll see how the wild man can get it done.
We spent a bunch of time talking about the schedule shakeup and how that would move Pro Spec to be the finale on Saturday for round 3. Looking at the drivers who are entered in Pro Spec, we're at 14 at least. A couple drivers pending maybe, but for sure 14 drivers are going to be in the field for Pro Spec for that big finale race on Saturday. Including a couple really fun new names. One of those, Jacob Wiedmeyer. It's his short course off-road debut. Actually bought the converted Sean Morris Pro Lite. So that truck, which was for sale for a long time, got the conversion put on it to a Pro Spec. He'll be out there. And then we talked about Connor Schultz and Wes Vandevort, who will split time in a pro spec truck this year. Of course, Wesley, you know him from Modcart, and you know Connor Schultz from winning a million races in light buggy and 1600. Connor Schultz drove that truck at Lena a couple weeks ago for their Mayhem at the Motorplex event, and was extremely fast, had a belt issue, but aside from that, was leading the pro spec race there. But Wesley Vandevort is going to make his prospect debut at Antigo. Plus, you also add in Nick Axelson, Justin Tesmer, Gavin Plummer, all drivers that we've seen in the class over the last year plus. Prospec is going to be a riot in Antigo.
Yeah, 14 trucks, Shane. That's what we like to see, right? There's going to be battles.
And the track's not that big.
No, it's not at all. So we're going to definitely deal with a lot of great racing. That's what I love to see. I was wondering when the numbers were going to pick up in this class. We've just been hearing multiple times of people building them, transitioning them from V8 to V6, and it's going to be a war. It's going to be fun, and with the new competitors in the class, I'm excited to call Pro Spec.
Yeah, and looking back at Pro Spec last year, remember Avery Hemmer was the winner in round three, I believe, last year, her first and to date only win in the pro ranks in Champ Off Road, and then Nick Visser was the winner on Sunday last year at Langlade County Motorplex. And it's Visser's hometown track too, just like I talked about with, it's kind of the spiritual hometown track of Adrian Chenny, cause that's where Case's shop is. But you know, it's Nick Visser's hometown track. He's from Elko, which is, you know, 20 minutes away from the speedway there in Antigo. Certainly he's going to be tough to beat. Maybe we will be in the business of making predictions, I guess. Do you have any predictions for Pro Spec?
Man, I don't know. That's a tough question. It's everyone's so fast. I mean, Wyatt Miller, the Thriller, he's always right there, right up until the end, no matter what. I mean, Vanden Elsen with that new truck. I mean, you said it right. Like, Visser's going to be a rocket ship. I mean, I can't give you that prediction, honestly. It's who can stay together and stay out of carnage and keep the truck on all four wheels.
By the way, I mentioned Wesley Vandevort making his debut in the class also this weekend at Antigo. He did post a video of testing, and the kid did not look slow, by the way. So maybe another really fast rookie. We saw Braden Boshaw have some promising moments throughout the two rounds at Wheatland. You know, the Modcart to Pro Spec pipeline is kind of already proven. I'm thinking Wesley Vandevort's going to be right in the mix, you know, for a strong finish both days.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Wesley. Just being in that Modcart, it says a lot, right, to get that power-weight ratio in the same direction of what you're going into. I mean, it's actually probably a little bit, if not quicker, than the pro specs on a lot of these tracks. So, like, once he gets adapted to that new truck, you're going to see him do some big things. And I agree with you. Watching the video on social media, he didn't look slouchy. He didn't look like he was out of shape a lot. He was focused and determined, so I'm excited to see what he can do.
I thought it was it's kind of a sidetrack a bit, but I thought it was interesting to see the amount of drivers who made a point to go to Antigo and test. I feel like we saw more drivers testing there over the last couple of weeks than we had seen in previous years. I mean, on the last episode, we talked to Michael Meister, and he talked about how he had gone up there to Antigo a couple of weeks ago to do some testing. Zach Sikowski was there. Ryan Schwalbe was there. Mickey Thomas was already up there to do some testing. Semi-related to that, Joey Machosik was out at ERX doing some testing after dropping in an LS power plant to his ProLite. Part of that, I think, is that it's tougher in the Midwest to test before the start of May, just because tracks aren't ready yet, because especially this winter up here in you know, the northern half of Wisconsin and up in your neck of the woods, felt like it was snowing into April. But do you get the sense that drivers are buying in a little bit more? And that's why we're seeing more effort to get out and test on each of the tracks that we race on?
Yeah, I believe so. I feel like we have more interest in the sport and more drivers that want to do better than just do a top 5 or a top 10 for the weekend. They want to dial in their equipment well beforehand. And I agree, when the weather is crappy up in the Midwest till April, beginning of May, it really makes it difficult. But when tracks, you got to give the tracks credit for allowing them to come out. Testing before is so huge. Granted, you got to have the money to do it, but I remember years back there was tracks that wouldn't even let you go on. So hopefully this is a big turnaround for more drivers to get more seat time well beforehand, so we'll see better racing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I think, you know, some great evidence for that is look back at Wheatland and look at the drivers who made a point to go there and test. I mean, Pro Spec on Sunday, the top two drivers there were Wyatt Miller, Chris Vanden Elsen, and they had both been down there running laps at Wheatland. Like you say, all seat time is good time. Even the drivers from the southern states like Code St. Peter and Carson Hill and Pro-Am side-by-side who get to run in Texas and, you know, the southern states basically year-round for all intents and purposes. They both found their way to the front too. So, yeah, I think drivers are so competitive, they want to make sure that they have every advantage they can get, right?
Oh, yeah, and that's what you have to do. And if you have the option to do it, you best do it. And if you have money in the program, sponsors behind you that can develop and get you the chance to go testing, that's huge for everyone and your program. So I expect a lot better things. I mean, granted, coming back to Crane and Bark River, we'll see how much testing goes on throughout the rest of the year. But I feel if that option's open to test, people are going to find the way, the will, the money to do what they need to do to get out there.
Well, the nice thing about the schedule for this year, you know, the season schedule, is that there is a little bit more time between races. We still kind of have the crunch from, you know, ERX to Lena to Bark River. That's still a pretty compact series of races, but the rest of the schedule got spread out a little bit more and kind of built in an extra week off. So I think other than when we get to those dog days where it's, you know, almost back-to-back-to-back races, I think we will see a lot more drivers trying to show up at ERX and spin some laps, or maybe even cram in a test at Lena before we go there in the middle of the year.
Right, yeah, wherever you can find time to go rip some laps, that's what you need to do. I mean, even if it's in an open field, but it's always nice to get on a regular track, one that you're going to be going to, especially.
There are a couple sportsman classes that really stand out to me as, you know, we're set up for some really good racing. Mod Kart has been phenomenal racing, even as so many drivers have graduated out of it over the last couple of years. But 14 entries at least for rounds 3 and 4. Some really fun rookies to the class. Also, Grayson Arneson, Drew Gerber, Jacoby Tullberg, all making their Mod Kart debuts. Each of those three drivers was a winner in the class that they graduated from last year. Grayson was in the 570s, Drew was in the 170s, and Jacoby was in short course kart. All three of those drivers, proven winners, jumping into a class that's historically been really difficult to be a rookie in. I really can't remember any rookie drivers jumping into that class and being fast right from the jump, but certainly those guys, those three, have the talent to, you know, they'll figure it out. What do you think would be, you know, a positive outcome from Antigo for those three rookies graduating from other youth classes into Mod Kart?
Man, just to get that seat time in and try to put it up on the box. If you can't, you can't. But, I mean, the good top five for your first day, first weekend in the class, I mean, they have seat time, these drivers. So, I mean, it's going to take a little bit of time to adapt. But once they adapt, sure, I think they're going to take off just like the rest of them, right? Mod Kart has just been huge for our sport the past 15 years.
Yeah, the nice thing about, you know, those three drivers is they've been around long enough that you don't get stressed out by anything except the novelty of the new class, the new truck that you're driving. Everything else is kind of routine. You're used to dealing with going through tech and getting suited up, all the stuff that becomes routine after you do it for a while. So in a way, you know, just being a veteran like that lets you focus on, all right, how can I learn how to drive this monster of a mod cart?
Yeah, experience is everything, and no matter what class you go in, but to only have to worry about the new vehicle you're driving is a huge statement in itself, because, right, you worry about everything else leading up to what if, what ifs, how, what's going to happen. You know, you can just sit back, focus, and you know they're all going to be in great trucks. So it's not going to be like they're going, right, to be in trucks that are breaking down or getting used to running around Antigo. I'm sure they're in well put together machines where it's just going to take them time to figure it out and drive the way they want to drive their car.
That's kind of a nice segue into what I think is going to be another really, what I predict is going to be a great story in Pro-Am Side-by-Side, another familiar name, proven winner from another class, making his champ debut in a new to him car, a new class. Colton Burns making his debut in Pro-Am Side-by-Side. You'll remember a couple years ago, he started to get really, really fast in 1600 buggy. But at the end of 2024 at Crandon World Championship weekend, he actually broke his back, landing a little bit off kilter on the barn jump. He has made a full recovery. He's been doing a bunch of kart racing and to get seat time in that in-between period, picked up a Pro-Am Side-by-Side, and he actually was at Mayhem at the Motorplex at Lena a couple weeks ago for their non-series race, non-points race, and won his class, and not just against some chumps. I mean, Bill Berger, Tyler Woosterbarth, Trent Peets, John Coomer were also there, all guys who have won in that class in Champ Off-Road, and Colton Burns, his first time racing the car, went out and won. So he's kind of picking up where he left off you know, before the broken back in 1600. I think he's going to be really fun to watch going up against those fast kids who are rookies in the pro-ams.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that just shows how strong he's going to be right away. I mean, anytime you can show up with that great a talent and get a win, even if it's not in the Champ Off-Road Circuit, I mean, you're doing something right. So I'm excited to see what he can do throughout the whole weekend, and I'm glad he's feeling better and back ready and going to go after it.
Yeah, he's messaged me a couple times this offseason saying that he's just, you know, excited to get back to, you know, competing in Champ Off-Road. And, you know, I'll tell you, I was at Mayhem at the Motorplex, saw it with my own two eyes. He's fast in that car. And like I said, that list of names I gave you that are all drivers he beat in that race to win, that's proven winners in Champ. So I think Colton Burns is going to be, frankly, I think he's going to be one to reckon with right from his debut in round three.
It's going to be interesting, and it's going to be one of many things we're going to have to keep an eye on. But hey, anytime you move up and move in a new class and you can be quick right away, hey, more power to you. The confidence is there, and he might be scared.
Some more great industry news. We've got another class sponsor in Champ Off-Road as well. Bobcat of Greenland steps up to support the short course carts. So that's fantastic news. More money, more support behind one of our youth classes. We talked about this leading up to the season, but just seems like things are trending in a positive direction, you know, not just for the series, but for the drivers, and not just the pro guys who are, you know, trying to do this for a living, but seems like the rising tide starting to lift all ships a little bit.
Yeah, it's always great to see sponsors just keep on coming on board and working with us. And I think it's going to take time, but I mean, who wouldn't want to be a part of Short Course? And it's cool to see some big names and some local names as we go to these local tracks step in and help out. Anything right to help our sportsmen, that's what we love to see.
Well, one partner who has been in off-road for a very long time is also the sponsor of this podcast. That's Amsoil. You can use the Amsoil Shop by Vehicle tool at amsoil.com and take all the guesswork out of picking the best oil and filter combination for your vehicle. Choose the right product and packaging option for you and enjoy fast, free delivery right to your door. Visit amsoil.com to learn more. Hey everyone, Shane from the editing desk here. What you'll hear next is a conversation I had a few days prior with Cross Kirchmeyer, just him and me. Here it is. Our guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil, you just saw him on top of the podium in the opening first two rounds at Wheatland at Pro Stock Side-by-Side. It is Cross Kirchmeyer. Cross, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, what's up?
We're super glad to have you. Right before we hit record, I was kind of asking you what your travel schedule looked like. You said the race car is already headed north for Antigo this weekend, being that it's Monday that we're recording, and you'll follow by air on Thursday, right?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, Dad left yesterday, so he's up actually in Minnesota at one of our kind of remote base up there at my friend's house, and kind of going over a few things on the car that we left up there, and he took last year's car that we had to bring home to fix some stuff on. Kind of our backup car that I'm going to use in the pro side-by-side class this coming weekend. But took that up there, and then, yeah, I'll fly out Thursday morning, leave work early, and head up there.
So you told me earlier this year that your team is small. It's kind of you and your dad, your wife, and kids. Is there anybody else that's part of the core, part of your team?
Man, that really is it. I mean, obviously, my mom, too, helps out with some stuff. But as far as, like, the car, my dad does 90 to 100% of everything. I'm at the shop, you know, turning wrenches and running the automotive repair. And he, at our house, we have like a two-car garage kind of thing. And he pretty much works out of that. And so he does, you know, all the building of the chassis and, you know, any engine work that we do, anything like that is all just kind of done out of the home. So it's very, very bare bones and, you know, as budget as we can make it.
You know, thinking about him being your chassis guy, as well as, you know, all the other stuff you just mentioned, is that something that's in his background? From a different motorsport, building cars?
So, you know, he grew up mainly racing stock cars. So when he was in high school and stuff, you know, he was, you know, pulling out old Ford Torinos and putting cages in them, and him and his friends would go race, you know, almost every weekend. So he's built just, I mean, who knows how many, you know, roll cages, stuff like that. Maybe not quite as elaborate as what we're into now.
Right.
But, you know, has that knowledge, and he kind of quit that. You know, they race a little bit when I was young, like I had mentioned the other day somewhere. My mom had won a stock car championship in a car that he built when I was three. And it wasn't long after that they kind of got out of that. We got into motorcycles. I grew up pretty much racing motorcycles my whole childhood. And then when the side-by-sides came out, like around 2013 or so, he saw that as like a, hey, you know, I enjoy dirt tracking. I think I can kind of use some of that knowledge here. And that really got him excited into that racing. And that's kind of where all that went. And then now that we're at the level we're at now, he's really getting to, you know, do full chassis builds and stuff. And he's really enjoying that.
So I get the sense that he's not so much like doing you a favor, helping you. This is something he would be finding a way to do regardless.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of the sense I get.
He definitely really, really enjoys it. I mean, you know, obviously it is a favor for me to be able to go and do this racing. And he's at the point where he's still very fast. I mean, he can run with us in the pro stock with no problem. It's just the time to have two full cars going kind of right. With just the small team. But he enjoys doing it and getting to tinker on it. And he loves just experimenting with stuff. You know, he'll spend days just on one little small part of the car saying, what can I do to make this better? You know, he just enjoys tinkering, you know, and it's cool to see.
Before last year, when you started running full time in the Champ Series, and you were doing what I gather from, you know, looking at your social media, there's a lot of stuff down in the southern states where UTV racing is really huge. But when you brought it to your family, who's also your team, that you wanted to go travel to the Midwest and beyond to keep pursuing your racing dreams, is that something that they bought into right away, or was, you know, what's that dynamic like, I guess?
Well, really, it kind of came down to, you know, when Texplex and MAO were big around here and close, you know, it kind of gave us enough competition where it's like, hey, you know, Champ is cool. And I came and did Crandon in 23, I think. And, you know, I'd like to do that, but the traveling is so much that, you know, the local stuff was just more appealing that way. And when that kind of died out around me, I kind of more or less assumed we were kind of done chasing the big stuff. And then it was actually more, I mean, I obviously wanted to, but didn't really expect my family to be able to, you know, I mean, it takes a lot to do that. And my dad kind of brought it up as like, hey, you know, I think that, you know, if I take some time and really build a car and, you know, with your drive, and I think we have a chance. So it was kind of more my dad's idea than mine, really. And you obviously didn't have to, you know, ask me twice. I was like, yeah, we're going to do that. I am on board. So, and then, you know, my mom and my wife are, you know, I mean, they weren't surprised when they married us that we were into racing. So they, you know, my wife doesn't love that I'm leaving her for, you know, 8 weekends a year or whatever. And I mean, she comes a couple of them, but, you know, she was definitely on board enough to, hey, if that's what y'all want to go do, you know, whatever it takes, let's go do it.
Do you find it a little bit difficult at times to keep the balance where it should be, where you're spending enough time focusing on your business and making sure that you have a healthy home life? I asked the same question on the previous podcast. We had Michael Meister on. He's kind of the same deal. He's got, you know, it's really his good buddy and his wife that is his whole team. Are there times when you have to like actively tell yourself like, all right, race car stuff can wait, let's spend more family time? Or how do you find that balance with everything?
Man, it is hard, especially like during the race season. I feel like there's like no real spare time. I mean, I'm always doing something. You know, luckily the way the Champ Series is, because it's up north, you know, it's kind of concentrated a certain number of months. So
right. In
the off season, you have a lot more time to do the family stuff, go take kind of more of the vacation trips with them and all that. But I mean, it's definitely, you know, week by week basis of like, okay, I didn't really do much with kids last week. I really need to spend one or two nights, like, let's play board games, let's go do something, you know. And then, you know, with church activities and stuff like that, I'm a part of a few different Bible studies. So I'm trying to kind of balance that with the kids, with the racing. And, you know, like I said, with my dad being kind of retired now and being able to do what he wants and enjoys, and that he enjoys this, that takes a lot of the, you know, racing prep and car load off of me. You know, I help on the weekends when I can if he needs me, but it lets me take that time to spend with the kids, take care of the business, get that stuff done while he's working on that. So really, I mean, it's not easy, but I think I have such a good support system around me that it all kind of tends to fall into place without too much of a hassle. I just gotta, you know, keep reminding myself where I need to move my focus to at the time.
It's hard to not get too driver brained and just think race car all the time, right?
Absolutely.
Hey, so I'm really curious about this. You came into Champ full time 2 years ago after showing up at Crandon for World Championships the year prior, or a couple years prior. You know, Champ and the community around it is a pretty tight knit group. What was it like for you as an outsider coming into that and trying to find your footing a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's very different. I didn't know what to expect too much. You know, I'd race with Colin Truitt a lot down here. He had traveled down. So kind of talking to him and his dad and stuff, you know, I kind of got a little bit of an idea of, you know, how people drove and things like that. And but really just kind of coming to that was, it's a little bit nerve wracking racing with a whole bunch of people you've never raced with before, because mm-hmm. everyone's racecraft's a little different. But, you know, after the first race, especially the first couple races, I mean, everyone I've raced with has raced me really clean. You know, like CJ, we had some good battles at that first Wheatland. And kind of after that, I kind of felt like, all right, you know, we're all here. We're all top level drivers. No one's doing anything crazy. You know, it's just really good racing. So on the racetrack, you know, I was very comfortable. I'm not the most social, outgoing person, so I don't walk around the pits probably as much as I should and, like, talk to the other racers in person as much. You know, it's definitely different. You know, most people are from up there. They've all raced together for so long that I definitely am kind of, like, outsider coming in. But, you know, it definitely takes some getting used to of meeting people and learning everyone and how everyone gets along.
You know, there's kind of a community on the edges of the community, too, not just the drivers, but... You know, you've got people like Impulse Media who they kind of stole you from us a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, people like Joey Moss and the Champ Memes page, where you've kind of become sort of a folk hero to some of those people a little bit. Is that something that you've run into in other places that you've raced, where you find fan support in kind of strange places or unusual places?
Man, it's never been to the level like it is like this. That's for sure. You know, I try to stay off of social media as much as I can. Just like with the family and stuff, I've really tried to not get where I'm too distracted and focus my time on them. So I think I'd heard of Joey Moss, but not too much until that first Wheatland race where I had some success. And Colin Truitt was actually like, "Oh, you see all your memes?" I was like, "I have no idea you're talking about." And he started showing me that. And that's kind of when, you know, I kind of met Joey, at least, you know, online, and I've met him in person since then. And then, yeah, you're like meeting the guys with Impulse Media and all that stuff. I wasn't really expecting coming into this, but it's cool, you know, just the amount of effort that Champ puts into the media stuff and, you know, having the streams and all that has definitely brought it to a wider audience than the races I've done locally. I mean, you know, there's obviously people here locally that I see and stuff like that that's kind of has those similar where they're fans of mine here and there, I guess, but nothing to the level that I've gotten out of Champ.
We can switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about Wheatland this year. Obviously, that's your big breakout weekend so far in Champ. You were the top qualifier in class for the first time in your short time racing in Champ, and then you swept the weekend. You know, how, I guess, describe the feeling of having almost the perfect weekend, pretty much the best weekend you can have as a racer. What does that feel like?
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, coming into it, I was not really expecting to win. Towards the end of the year last year, you know, I had gotten faster, but so did David Gay. Had gotten on rails towards sure. the end, and I figured he, you know, with Van Epperen being out and CJ being out at the beginning, I really figured he was going to be just about impossible to beat. And then, you know, people like Colin Truitt, who's a great driver, just had some bad luck. And then you got like Kosmecki and a couple of other guys that, I mean, they're all really fast. So, and it's not like I was the only one working in the offseason. So, yeah, I kind of came in with the same expectations of like, well, really, the very first year I had really low expectations. But after last season, expecting hopefully podiums, you know, as long as I can be on the podiums, you know, that's what we're looking for. That's what we're going to be happy. So after getting the fastest qualifying lap, I was kind of like, okay, well, maybe we're in a better spot than I realized. And then, you know, had a pretty good battle Saturday with Brody Sands, who, you know, I've actually been able to race with a lot down here in Texas. I've raced with him several times, but doing that was, you know, not easy and a great battle. And we ended up, you know, pulling off the win there and just, yeah, I couldn't believe that. And then going into pulling the six invert, you know, kind of more of midfield off the start for Sunday and, you know, figured everyone else was going to be, you know, figuring stuff out the track like I was, and being able to back that up on Sunday was just completely unexpected, completely crazy, but, you know, obviously awesome. And again, couldn't have asked for much a better weekend to start the season off.
And last year at Wheatland, you had a couple of third place finishes, if I remember right. So is there something about Lucas Oil Speedway, that track, that just seems to suit your strengths a little bit?
I think it does. I mean, I haven't been there very much. I mean, I raced there years ago with MAO and then the two Champ races. That's all I've been there. I haven't gone and done any practices. I didn't get to go to the Outlaw race they had there before Champ started. We didn't have the car ready. But I really enjoy kind of the, I wouldn't say that's a tight track, but, you know, lots of turns, lots of stuff going on. The dirt being really hard packed, I think kind of suits just the torque that the Honda has. I don't know, my driving style on that track just seems to work, and I just kind of was able to figure it out. And yeah, obviously that track just works good for me.
And you said coming into last year, kind of your expectation or your hope was that you'd be able to, you know, kind of be a consistent podium finisher. After you start this season with a weekend like that, does that change your expectations moving forward? Are you expecting, obviously you would never expect to continue like sweeping weekends, but you know, does it, you know, raise your own expectations on yourself a little bit when you start that strong?
It really hasn't, just because I know there's so many good drivers. I mean, yeah, I would love to say that it's given me so much confidence that I think I can win everything, but I mean, there's no way. It's not realistic.
Right.
You know, I'm still, you know, my focus for the year is still podiums every race. You know, if I can get on the podium every race and not have those bad races or, you know, the cars breaking, then, you know, I'll be super thrilled with even how the championship shows up. Turns out, you know, if I can just stay consistent, that will make me happy. So, I mean, with that though, obviously winning makes me feel like now I know that I can, you know, always before that's always been like, hey, you know, I can get on the podium, but can I really, you know, get on the top of with these guys? And so, I mean, it's definitely helpful, but still doesn't change my focus too much on just being consistent as possible.
And when it comes to consistency, I think a great example is that shows just how tough it can be to find consistent good finishes. And you mentioned Colin Truitt last year. I think he had a couple of wins in pro stock, but couldn't find the consistency when it's such a competitive class. I've joked with other drivers that even the slow guys in your class are really fast.
Oh yeah.
With a class like that, how tough is it to, you know, put together weekend after weekend of strong finishes and avoid bad luck along the way?
I mean, there's definitely some luck in it of just kind of weird freak car failures and things. But I mean, in the class like we have, I mean, yeah, you make one mistake in a corner and you spin or, you know, get off a jump real squirrely. I mean, you get passed by three or four people. So you really can't afford to make even the small mistakes. So you really have to focus on the track of just, you know, minimizing mistakes, hitting your lines, and, you know, make sure, you know, hopefully your car is good to where you don't have to worry about it breaking. You can drive it as hard as you can the whole time, because that's the only way you can stay in the front in that class.
You know, looking back at where you raced before Champ, I know that, like you said, you had a pretty long run of racing, you know, other series, more regionally stuff down in the southern states, where you won a bunch of races and were super competitive. When you came into Champ, you know, we saw that it took you a full year plus a weekend to win your first race. Is that just kind of a reflection of the talent that is here in Champ?
Oh yeah, I mean, everyone there is super fast. Like I said, the pro stock class, you know, it may not always be the most exciting class to watch, but I think the talent field there is just so deep, you know, just so much talent, and the cars are so even. And, you know, coming into a new series that I haven't ran very much, and just basically last year, pretty much every track I went to besides Lucas and Crandon for the one event I had done, you know, were all just brand new to me. So you get there and it's, you know, trying to walk the track and learn as quick as you can. And then, you know, you have very limited laps for practice and qualifying. So you don't get a lot of time to figure things out. So if anyone's been there for 2, 3, 4, 10 years racing these tracks, it's a...
like CJ, who has 1,000 laps on all of them.
Exactly. I mean, it's, you come in and it's a little bit intimidating, and just, you know, you're having to figure this stuff out. These guys are probably, I mean, almost to the point where they're just bored. They've done so many laps, and you know, I'm just still at that, you know, figuring out what I can do, picking these tracks apart and trying to see how I can go faster on them. It's awesome. I really enjoy the challenge and the new stuff that I get to do with Champ. You know, it's definitely cool, but yeah, definitely a learning curve.
Are you doing anything away from the racetrack to help shorten that learning curve a little bit? Like do you grind film? Do you go back and watch your in-car stuff to see where you can improve, or what are you doing to try to shorten that learning curve a bit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, before last season, like basically before every race, I would go back and watch, you know, the last 2 to 5 years or whatever of the track we were going to, you know, watch, you know, not just the pro stock class, but that would be my focus. But I'd watch, you know, the full pro programs of all of those, much as I could. You know, I had done some desert races and stuff with another team, and, you know, sitting in the toter on those 8-hour drives, I would just, you know, turn on flow and just try to watch as much as I can, watch the track as much as I can, try to get myself oriented on how the track went. And I think that helped a lot. All the racing I've done, especially on motorcycles, was every track was different every time you came. So it's unusual for me to race the same track multiple times, really. So I think all those years of doing that has kind of taught me to learn them pretty quickly and pick up on the stuff. So now that I've raced them all once, you know, or, you know, multiple times because of the weekends, yeah, I think I've got them all mostly, at least in my mind, a game plan when I get there. You know, last year was all like, okay, I'm figuring out when I'm here. Now it's kind of like, okay, I've learned stuff.
Yeah.
And now I can come at this with what I have from last year. And it definitely makes it a lot easier to put down good laps, you know, a lot quicker.
Feels less like you're drinking from a fire hose.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. You've mentioned a couple times that you have the motocross background, and obviously there's a whole bunch of drivers in Champ who have that same thing, but I'm pretty sure I saw on your Instagram that you've done, I'm pretty sure, BMX racing or something on bicycles. You've also done some asphalt stuff. Am I right with that?
Yeah, I've done, or at least try to do everything I can. You know, I've done BMX kind of on and off all through like high school and stuff. There's a couple local tracks. I guess it's probably been 5 or 6 years ago now. I started doing some asphalt stuff, like road courses. There's two or three around me that are within an hour, and doing that kind of somewhat for cross training for the driving. It's very different, but it's still, I mean, anything like that, like the karting and stuff like that. You know, I just did a 8-hour endurance team race with the Millers.
Wow.
Past weekend, yesterday. And, you know, anything like that, we can get behind the wheel, I think, is just good kind of cross training, keep you fresh, and helps a lot. So, yeah, anything I can get my hands on that I can race, you know, I am all about it.
A good example of that, I think, is, man, this probably 5 years ago, we had Jimmy Henderson on the podcast, and he was telling us that he did a lot of training on iRacing, you know, simulating the racing, but he would also load up like road racing tracks like Road Atlanta and just drive the Pro 4 there. And he's like, you'd be amazed what you could figure out just by stepping out of your comfort zone a little bit. So I, you know, what you just said totally reflects that, I think.
Oh yeah, definitely. And you know, when COVID happened and everything kind of was shutting down and we weren't really sure what the racing was going to be like, I built a sim rig and
nice.
I did a whole lot of iRacing and stuff. And yeah, I mean, it's definitely different, you know, between the asphalt and the dirt, but I think there's a level of concentration that's almost more so in the asphalt because you have to be so precise in everything. And the dirt is a little more forgiving, at least in my eyes. I can, you know, throw it in. You know, if I'm a couple inches off here and there, it's not a big deal. But the asphalt is like you have no real, you know, leeway with a lot of the lines. So it helps, I feel like, with my mental focus for, you know, staying on target and on point with my lines throughout the race for sure.
Looking ahead to this weekend at Antigo, I think at least on social media anyways, and I'm sure you've seen bits and pieces, even if you're not on there a whole lot, kind of the fallout, I guess, from the pro schedule shakeup for both days at Antigo. Now, it doesn't really affect pro stock because you kind of find yourself in the middle, just like you had before. I think you're third one of the days and then fourth one of the days, but you will be out there after the pro twos both days. Do you have any opinions or thoughts on changing up the schedule a little bit?
I mean, yeah. I mean, like you're saying, it doesn't really affect my class this race. So it's not going to really change too much of my plan. But yeah, I've seen a lot of different arguments on both sides of it, and I can kind of understand
right.
all the sides. I definitely am on the fence of, hey, it's not hurting anything to try it. I want to see what happens. Most of the stuff I've raced my life has always had kind of a rotating schedule anyway. I thought it was almost a little bit odd when I first started doing Champ that the schedule was always the exact same. Not that it's bad, it was just kind of different than what I was used to.
The way that it's been running is like 20 years of being baked into how the schedule has looked.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of fallen into a place where like any place anybody ever works, you run into this where, why do we do it this way? I don't know. That's just how we've done it.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what was kind of going on there.
Yeah, the thing that I personally like about the rotating schedule or changing things is where now there's different races I'm going to get to watch live. Because doing the pro for me, you know, I'm pretty much stuck where I don't get to watch the pro spec and I really can't watch the pro buggy because I'm getting ready for things. But now with this change, you know, I might miss, yeah, the pro two or whatever now, but I'll get to watch the pro spec easier, at least when they're going to be last and like pro buggy on Sunday or however that schedule works out. But,
yep.
You know, so for that part, it's kind of cool. Yeah, the track changing, you know, not knowing what the track's going to be like. You know, being all there last year, I kind of did kind of get an understanding of how my track would normally be. But even then, you know, sometimes they still don't always prep the exact same every time. So,
right.
You know, for me and the cars we drive, it's not going to affect me too much like it way it sounds like it would for like the truck guys. So if it's going to help them out, then I'm all for whatever brings better racing.
Yeah, I think Pro 2 is going to be fantastic with a fresh prep both days. It's going to be awesome.
Yes, I'm definitely excited to see that. And I don't think from my viewpoint, I don't think the schedule change is going to affect the fans too much one way or the other. I think all the classes have such good racing and all the classes have their fans. I think it's going to be, especially at Antigo, you know, packed stands the entire time.
For sure, Pro Spec being the final race on Saturday night, that's a slam dunk to me.
Yeah.
That's going to be, like you said, it's going to be still full grandstands, and all the guys who've already raced, I think, are going to be up there too to check that one out.
Yep.
Looking at Antigo, the track itself, last year, like I said, Wheatland, you had a really strong start, and then Antigo didn't quite go your way. Are you confident that it'll go better for you this time around?
Yeah, I mean, last time, both races, I got taken out with mechanicals, like, pretty quickly in both races. So, really, of all the tracks, I probably have the least laps on Antigo. But I like the track. And I think kind of in the same vein somewhat of how Wheatland is, I think Antigo kind of favors me and my car. So, you know, I think this probably of all the rest of the season, except for maybe Lena, I think is one of the better chances of me getting a win. So I'm definitely going to go in with high hopes and, you know, plan on hopefully winning here, because when we get to the longer, faster tracks like Crandon, the Polaris's are a little bit faster on the long speed straightaways. So I'm going to try to take advantage of these shorter, tighter tracks when I can. That way I have a little bit of breathing room when we get to those tracks where I'm at. I feel like I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage.
Out of those down in the southern states that you raced on, obviously I know Texplex and MAO are nothing like Antigo. Have you really raced on any, you know, smaller bullring style tracks like that other than racing at Antigo and at Lena?
So there is one track. It's a dirt track here called Big O Speedway.
Okay.
And my dad built them kind of a short course-ish thing kind of off to the side of their oval, where we would use the oval and a little bit outside of it. So I raced that for like a season and a half, several races there. So that'd probably be the closest thing. It was still a little bit bigger, but it was still had like one big sweep and turn, kind of like Antigo does on the dirt oval and things like that. So besides that, though, most of the other tracks were a lot bigger. So it's definitely different being on that small, that tight of a track in these cars. But again, it's another thing I think is cool. Just all the tracks being so different, some being small, some being big. You know, it's just that variety that makes it enjoyable.
Some of the conversations that I have with people, especially people who are part of teams in like Pro 2 and Pro 4, or more fans of, you know, the full-size truck racing, they don't like the short tracks as much. And I get it. It's tougher to pass, and the racing becomes a little bit more physical and sometimes a little bit dirty. But the comparison that I've always used is like NASCAR needs Martinsville and Bristol, and off-road needs tracks like that too, I think.
Yeah, you know, and I don't have any experience in the trucks, so it's hard for me to talk for them. But, you know, watching the races, I can definitely see like it's a lot tighter, a lot harder to make those passes. But, you know, I think that sometimes these style tracks favor different driving and drivers and their driving styles. So having that variety, I think, makes it to where it's not always just who can hold it wide open the longest and toss it super hard into a corner. It's more those that can be more calculated and hit their lines and make these tight corners work for them. So, you know, yeah, it might not be some people's favorites, but I think, again, it's that variety that lets every driver have their best chance of showcasing their talents.
You touched on this a little bit ago, and I want to, mostly for myself, get some more information on this so I can be a little bit more informed. But I know really well the differences between Polaris's and Yamaha's that are kind of the two predominant brands that drivers are driving. Like you said, the Polaris with the CVTs do a little bit better when they can open up a little bit. The Yamaha's seem to do better on the tighter tracks, and you said the Honda is a little bit better on the tighter tracks too. Why is that? What's the key difference there?
So for me, and I don't have a whole lot of time in the Yamahas, I've raced them once or twice, but I raced Polaris for a long time before the Honda came out, so I'm kind of familiar with how they were. But with the Hondas, they're just a lot torquier. They have a lot of bottom end grunt, so the shorter tracks where we're getting really slow out of the corners, I think the Honda really shines in those situations. But because of that, and the way they have the gearing and the transmission, you know, we have a 6-speed dual clutch. So kind of similar to the Yamaha in some ways, but, you know, I have paddle shifters and no clutch pedal. With that, I'm kind of geared out to a certain speed, which is like just a little bit above 80. So when you get to like these Crandon tracks, you know, at the end of the straightaway, I'm kind of running out of steam, and those Polaris's can run that in. So, you know, again, I can kind of get out of the corners a little faster sometimes, but sometimes, depending on how long the tracks are, it's hard for me to make up that speed difference on those guys sometimes.
That's good. I was able to learn something too.
What I like about that, which the Yamaha guys can kind of do this too, is with the gears, you know, being able to short shift it some and different things. I feel like I have more options for trying to find traction and things like that.
Right. So
that's why I think on those, you know, really dry slick or hard pack tracks like Wheatland and like,
yeah, you can grab a gear early and dog it out a little bit.
Yes, definitely. I think there's just more options for me there. And I think that helps out on some of those tracks like that.
Well, I appreciate you teaching me all that. And now for a far less on topic question, I have to know, what's the deal with the chocolate milk on the podium?
I love chocolate milk for one. I mean,
who doesn't?
You know, it's something I've always drank, and I don't drink energy drinks and things like that. So, you know, I always see people with their Monster cans or Red Bull or whatever. And I was like, I want something. And I was like, you know, I'll start doing chocolate milk, and that'll maybe give me like that little extra quirky thing that people will remember you by, you know, like if they may not know who I am, like, hey, is that the guy with chocolate milk? You know, it's enough to just, I don't know, brand recognition in a way, even though it's not really a brand.
Sure.
But again, just something that I thought would be funny, and it got a lot more attention than I expected, honestly. Yeah. I've been asked by a ton of people. You know, my dad always talks when I do good on a weekend, he's pretty much on the phone all day Monday, sometimes Tuesday. He does some engine building for other people, like even some of my competitors. He'll build engines and help things like that. So he usually gets a lot of calls from that or other people that run Hondas. But he said that on Monday he got a lot of questions from people of like, okay, what's with the chocolate milk? Like, what's the deal with this? You know, and it's like, oh, it's just something we're doing. So, it definitely it worked.
I mean, you start doing that in Wisconsin, you're bound to get some partnership opportunities with a local dairy, really. You might be ahead of the game there.
We're going to try. I would love to get some kind of sponsorship. I mean, I don't even really need much besides maybe, hey, give me a gallon of chocolate milk on a weekend. And
there you go.
Get a name on the side just so I could say I'm sponsored by a chocolate milk company. I think that would just be so cool.
Cross, before we let you go, I know that we talked about how small your team is, but do you have any companies, any other partners that are helping support your efforts this year?
I mean, really the biggest help I have this year is Double E Racing, George. I know he does shocks for a lot of, at least the side-by-side people. And he's letting us pit out of their toter home and everything this year, bringing that for us. So that's huge help of having someone be able to bring that for us, because we have a pretty small little trailer. We don't have a full setup with tent and anything.
Well, hey, man, I really appreciate you spending some time with us. And I wish you the best of luck in Antigo this weekend. And hopefully we'll see you up there again, half gallon of chocolate milk in hand.
Yes. Yep. Going to do my best. And I definitely appreciate you having me on.
Well, Brent, as we are recording our portion of this podcast, you know, the countdown timer on the Champ Off Road website, it's no longer days to rounds 3 and 4. It's just hours now. It's that close to us. You know, obviously, we're excited for Pro Spec, a bigger field, Pro Buggy being the grand finale on one of those 2 days. It's going to be absolutely phenomenal to close out the weekend. You know, Pro 4, we talked about how every driver in that class really does have a chance to win, but on the sportsman side of things, are there any classes to you that stand out as, you know, super intriguing, must-see entertainment this weekend?
Well, normally we always like to say super stock truck, right? Right,
that's away. Easy answer.
Always, that's an easy answer. I want to go down to 1600 buggy. I believe that the single buggies are going to be really, really challenging to win at Antigo. I mean, I think you're going to have your normal guys up front running the show, but at the end of the day, there's so much talent there. Going back and forth, swapping positions. You never know who's going to win at any given time. And I'm pretty excited about 1600 buggy.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. You know, we saw a little bit smaller field in Wheatland with some drivers taking their drop rounds for the year and skipping out on the longest travel that the sportsman would have to go up against. But yeah, I think, you know, 1600 buggy has been awesome for a couple of years now. Just glancing at the points, and it's the teammates, Connor Schultz, Taylor Roloff with the points lead, and the defending champ, Seafelt, hot on their heels. Donald Reitzel has been really fast in Antigo. Something about that place seems to suit him really well. So, yeah, I'm right there with you. I think there's, honestly, a half dozen guys in 1600 that could find their way to the number one spot this weekend. Light buggy, we talked about before the year, I think is going to be another one. We saw kind of what we expected to see. I don't think anybody expected to see a weekend sweep in the opener with Evan Hockers taking those 2 wins. But we did see a bunch of other drivers on the podium. And we also had some new faces on the podium. And then we had some drama in post-race tech inspection. So there's a few drivers who you know, were penalized, disqualified in light buggy. We talked about how it's a wide open points battle, but I think especially for those drivers who were penalized or went to Wheatland and didn't do as well as they had hoped, there's going to be that much more urgency. Nobody's going to run away with that championship. It's not going to be clinched early, I don't think. It's going to come right down to the, you know, maybe the final laps at in the final round at Crandon. So I'm excited for light buggy. I'll pile on a little bit more. I'm excited for mod cart, but I'm always excited for mod cart. Those kids rip. The trucks are awesome to watch. And stock truck, I think, is going to be really fun, too. We saw Colt Wurzba sweep down in Wheatland, but Dustin Rogaczewski was fast both days. And I think maybe that's a preview of kind of the battle that we'll see all season long to an extent. There's other drivers, obviously, who can win in that class, but I expect Rogaczewski to come out swinging at Antigo and maybe land a couple punches back on Wurzba and try to take at least one win.
Yeah, I think stock truck's going to be a good, fun one to watch as well. And Colt's just running that fast already this season, so it'll be hard to keep him behind, but anybody can win at any given time. And you got to, you know, to finish first, you have to finish. And I believe it goes a long way still in the stock truck division, even back 15, 20 years ago. You got to keep the trucks together. They're a little bit more stronger nowadays, but anything can happen. And with the temperatures the way they're going to be, you might have overheating. Anything could go down at Antigo, and that's why it makes it so interesting.
Yeah, you bring up the temperatures. This is probably the best news that we can deliver on this podcast as we're a couple days away from racing. But again, all forecasts are subject to change, but I've been looking at the weather every day all week. As you and I are talking right now, it's Wednesday afternoon. The forecast shows low 70s to low 80s all weekend, virtually no chance of rain all 3 days. That is about the best news that we could get. It's really tough to dodge rain for three straight days in northern Wisconsin at the end of May. Looks like we're going to do it. Fingers crossed.
Well, I'm knocking on some wood right now, so hopefully everything stays in lockstep. We've been pretty blessed on how the seasons went so far, so we'll have to wait and see. Anything can happen in the Midwest, like we said, and I'm just excited.
I don't believe in jinxes, but I didn't even want to bring up, you know, what I believe is really good news as far as the forecast is concerned. So don't blame me if it changes, but it looks good for now. That's all we can tell you. But with that, my friend, racing at Antigo, rounds 3 and 4, just a couple days away. For those of you out there listening, if you can't make it to Langlade County Motorplex, man, we sure wish you could. It's such a great place to go watch racing. With the schedule changes and the way that the pro schedule got pushed a little bit further back in the evening, we're going to be finishing up just a little bit before sunset, that beautiful golden hour. The pro racing is going to look fantastic on Saturday night. Pushed everything forward a little bit on Sunday, so if you can make it up there, you're getting out of there before dinner time. You'll be, you know, back home if you live nearby before the sun sets. Love to have you there, but if you can't be there, find us on Flow Racing. Some of our races also free to view on Facebook as well, so look for us there. And we go live 9:45 a.m. Central on Saturday for round 3. Brent, any final thoughts?
Man, it's Antigo. We've been going here for years, and now to see how healthy the series has been, I mean, going to get a lot more car and truck counts in a lot of our classes, so I'm excited, man. It's going to be great weather, great time, short bullring track. I mean, you can't ask for much more in the second weekend off in the series, and I think we're going to see some great racing.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm excited. I think the stands are going to be packed. They're going to be repaid in full by all of our racers putting on one heck of a show, and I can't wait to get to it. But that'll do it for this episode of the podcast. He's Brent, I'm Shane, and this has been the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL. We will talk to you again from Antigo very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL.
Let me not choke on my words.